This week, we learn exactly what happens when two sets of parents provide their children with horrible role models, and then two of those kids decide to get married and try to have a normal relationship. Drugs, alcohol, infidelity, mental abuse, parental alienation, stalking, sexual abuse, gaslighting, the tragic list goes on and on. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good. Oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Hello and welcome to another episode of My Crazy Divorce. I'm your host, Tom Milligan. Today's story, like all of them before it, is not only crazy, but tragic. But the tragedy isn't just about our guest's marriage and divorce. The tragedy started decades earlier and gives living proof of how badly we can screw up our kids. I can't wait to hear how you feel about this week's show. But before we meet this week's guest, I need to say thank you. Thanks to all of you for listening. Obviously, we wouldn't have a show without you. I also want to thank those of you who have given us a 5-star rating on your podcast apps. It's a little thing, but it goes a long way to helping grow the audience. I also want to say thank you to all of our guests. We certainly wouldn't have a show without them. And during every show, I ask those of you with a crazy divorce story to share that story. Of course, the show is designed to be entertaining, but I hear from people literally every week telling me how the show has helped them. So if you have a crazy divorce story to tell, please go to mycrazydivorce.com right now and click on the apply to be a guest button so we can keep the show going. Now, if you're a longtime listener, you already know this. But if you're new here, I need to make sure you know that I'm not an attorney or a therapist. So please don't consider anything said on this show to be legal or therapeutic advice. Oh, I almost forgot. Be sure to stick around after the interview for a new segment we're trying out. Okay, with all the housekeeping out of the way, let's meet Lauren.
Lauren, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to hear this story today. As most people know, our guests apply on the MyCrazyDivorce.com website. And when I read your entry, wow, I could not believe the roller coaster we're about to hear. And so let's just get right into it. Let's get started with where you're from. Tell us about your family and your early life.
I'm from a small town outside of Phoenix, Arizona. It's called Tolleson. Very small farming community. I am number 6 of 7 kids. My dad passed away when I was 4 and a half. My mom was a single parent of 7 kids at a very young age. I think my oldest brother was 12 at the time, maybe 13, 14, preteen. My sister, my mom had kids in diapers for 10 years. So once my dad died, we were in the same house until I was 14. Grew up LDS. A lot of the people in our neighborhood were also LDS. My family was LDS. And then once my dad died, my mom kind of dealt with it in her way.
You said that there were 7 kids in the family, I was thinking it's either Catholic or Mormon. And for those not familiar with the acronym, LDS stands for Latter-day Saints, which is another shortened version of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is also known as the Mormons. So I think you're our 3rd or 4th Mormon that's been on the show. And of course, most people know that I'm a recovering Mormon. So it's always fun to hear about that stuff.
Yeah. So grew up LDS Mormon and my mom started dating. And once my mom started dating, there was a lot of people in the community that did not, I don't think that they agreed with it, or she was doing things, and I was young, so I don't know what she was doing, but she was obviously doing things that they didn't agree with, and she felt judged. And so she started pushing those people away, but she also wasn't there. She found a boyfriend. I don't know if I should say his name on here, but his name was Vic. To us, his name was Vic the Dick. Nobody liked him. He owned an antique store. That's how they met. She was into antiques and he owned an antique store. So she started helping him at the antique store. And they were together for about 2 years. And I was probably 9, 10 at this point.
So she waited a few years.
She waited a few years.
Okay, so the judgment from the community, and when you say the community, you're talking about the church members, I assume.
Yeah, and our neighborhood was so small. It was the majority of our neighborhood was, I mean, the bishop was our neighbor.
Of course.
So
right. The
community was, our actual town was so small that most of the community you went to church with.
Okay.
And
So she waited a few years before she really started dating. But even with that, the community was saying, well, we don't agree with this. Or was it something other than the fact that she was dating?
I don't know. I was so young. I just knew that people stopped coming around. Like, okay. In the Mormon community, like, they're huge on community. They help. When my dad died, people stopped by all the time. People were bringing meals, picking us up and taking us to church, going to school. Like, the community was very involved once my dad passed away. I guess it wasn't an all of a sudden. It was just kind of gradually. And still to this day, I don't know if I've gotten the real story. I think she felt judged on the lifestyle that she was living. And she got out of the faith. She stopped going to church. She dated Vic for 2 years. And he was separated at the time. And he decided that he wanted to go back to his wife. And so he broke it off with my mom. And this was extremely difficult. It was her first serious relationship after my dad. And he broke her heart. And she broke apart. It was very hard for all of us to see her that way. And it took her about a year, maybe two, to get over him. And then once she got over him, she gets a phone call and says, I'm leaving my wife. And she didn't tell us. She hid it from us for a while. Well, and kind of backtrack, the first time they were together, he came and stayed with us. He was in between places. And we were sitting at the dinner table, and my brother's in high school at this point. I'll never forget this. My brother was sitting at one head of the table and he's at the other head of the table. And here's my brother, who's been like the patriarch since my dad left.
Yeah.
And Vic scolded him for something or like, listen to your mother or clean the table or something. And my brother just looked at my mom, and my mom said, do what he says, or something to that effect. And my brother got up and left, and he moved out. Maybe it was the second time they got back together.
Wow. Wait a minute. The second time.
So he said, I'm going back to my wife. And so they broke up. He went back to his wife. He tried to work it out with his wife. And a year or two later, she gets a phone call that says, okay, it didn't work out. I'm leaving my wife. And for a while, I think she said she was dating some guy named Mike or something like that. And she took me and my sister swimming at somebody's pool. And we were at the pool, and we were young enough to where she couldn't leave us by ourselves. And she needed to use the restroom. So she took us up to this apartment to go to the restroom, and his family pictures were in the apartment. And that's how we found out that she was really seeing Vic. And my sister and I were like, excuse my language, but like, in our tiny little minds, we're like, what the fuck? Like, are you kidding me? We didn't say anything. We didn't know. We were young. And
wait, so to be clear, she waits a couple of years, starts and dates Vic for a couple of years, breaks up with Vic, or he breaks up with her. Mm-hmm. She spends 2 years miserable, finally gets over him, and starts dating him again, though.
Yeah.
But didn't tell you guys that.
Yeah.
Because she knew you'd probably be like, what the fuck?
Oh, hell no, yeah.
Wow. Okay, so you find out that mom's back with Vic. So this is round two with Vic.
This is round two. And this is why we hate him. So she's round two with Vic. She's back at the antique shop. They buy and sell antiques. They travel all over for antique auctions. Meanwhile, my brother and my sister, the oldest brother and sister, are really holding down the fort. I mean, my oldest sister, Claire, she did the grocery shopping. She signed my permission slips. She made us come home from friends' houses to clean and do our chores. My brother grounded us. Like, we all kind of just raised ourselves. I mean, CPS showed up at our door a couple times, and they would come into the house and see a fridge full of food and roof over our heads and turn a blind eye. Because, I mean, we weren't really deprived. We had food, we had shelter, we had older siblings there to take care of us. So yeah, that went on for a long time. And then at 14, my mom moved across the valley and I was going into seventh grade and I wanted to stay and finish junior high. So I moved in with my aunt and uncle who lived like two blocks from us. And I lived there for my seventh and eighth grade year and my mom moved across town. It was like 30, 45 minutes from me. Well, from where we were at. And so, I mean, everybody was devastated. We were in that same house for 14 years. Well, I was in there for 14 years. So she moved across town. I finished out 7th and 8th grade living with my aunt and uncle. And then my 8th grade summer going into freshman year, I had to make the decision if I wanted to stay with my aunt and uncle or if I wanted to stay and go to high school in our hometown where everybody knows us. My grandpa owns a dairy there. We grew up on the dairy and I mean, we were just, everybody knew us. And my mom said, no, you need to come home. And so, yeah. So I moved back to Tempe. Not back. I moved to Tempe with my mom. And at this time, there was four of us. Two of my older sisters, me, and then my little brother. My younger brother. He's not so little. He's 3 years younger than me to the day. We have the same birthday. So he has some learning disabilities and mental health issues. So he was a lot to handle for my mom. He was in and out of treatment a lot growing up. And so she had her hands full with him. Still dating Vic, but Vic doesn't come around. I mean, it's like a separate life that she had. We tolerated him. We were respectful, I would say, consider. We tolerated him, but nobody liked him. She spent most of her time with him. I mean, there were times where she'd be gone for, all growing up, she'd be gone for 2 weeks at a time. And then she'd come home.
So how old were you when you moved to Tempe?
Going into freshman year, so probably 14, 15.
Okay. So for 10 years, your dad passed, and then for 10 years, you've been living with relatives, being raised by your siblings. Basically, I don't want to say an orphan, but definitely not a very active mother role involved.
No.
Now, were your relatives active LDS? And when you were living with them, did you go to church with them?
By this time, we hadn't practiced. We hadn't practiced in years.
So you're talk about your high school years. Were you the jock? Were you the popular kid, cheerleader?
I just kind of stayed under the radar. I think freshman year, I was trying to figure myself out. I was in a new place, new school, very different from where we grew up. And just confused. And I think that's probably when I started smoking pot. And I think I just became a complete pothead my whole 4 years of high school. I'm not even going to lie.
Like, you're sitting there not even able to remember most of it.
So yeah, I just stayed under the radar. I was very much a tomboy and just woke up, went to school, got my shit done and went home and just, I kind of lived my best life in high school. I experimented with a lot of things.
There you go. Objective achieved.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go back and talk about your ex-husband. Obviously, it's hard to know the same amount of detail, but to the extent that you can, tell us about, we're going to call him Richard, is what we've decided. I think we all know the reason for that.
Richard's parents grew up in San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury, would go listen to Janis Joplin at the park out of her truck very much hippie-esque. Didn't want to raise kids in this world and did not want to have kids. And they were both kind of just living their best life. And then they met each other and got married. And he was a general contractor. And she went to esthetician school. She did hair. They moved to Phoenix. I don't know what brought them to Phoenix, to be honest with you. And she got pregnant. He has one older brother. He's 2 years older than him. And then it's him. That's it. Just the two boys. And dad went to Bible college. And yeah. So dad went to Bible college. Both kids very active in hockey. Grew up playing hockey. Very active.
So naturally you moved to Phoenix.
Right? I mean, like, people were like, you're from where? And you do what? So both boys, his dad's family is all Canadian. So that's where the hockey comes from. His dad played hockey. So naturally they grew up playing hockey. Dad went to Bible college, would go to the prisons on the weekends and teach. And then he was very active in a church. Politics got in the way and he just completely stopped, got out of church. He still has looking from the outside in, I mean, he still has a very active relationship with God. He reads his Bible. He's very not perfect.
None of us are. No,
but he's always traveled with his Bible. He's always taught me and the kids. He's always said, you don't have to go to church to have a relationship with God. And I thank him for that because I teach that to my kids now and you don't. And you go to church too. And it's just like he said, the church isn't the building, it's the people. And then I think once the boys got into high school, she went back to nursing school. Once the boys started high school though, they were both traveling for, now at this point, they're traveling for hockey. His brother went to Notre Dame. He was going to Seattle. So a lot of their high school, they were traveling for hockey and going to high school at different high schools. Like nothing was consistent.
So they would travel not just for the weekends to go to a game. Like I did a lot of traveling with my kids for soccer and swim and stuff like that, but it was just weekends and during the summer. You're talking months at a time.
They had host families and would like go to high school there and like,
holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah, it was serious.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, I think he started at 15. At 15, they gave him the choice. I look back now and I'm like, my son's 14 and a half and no way in hell would I give him a choice to travel. Because he would be like, peace out. And I'd be like, no. But they gave him the choice at 15 if he wanted to travel and go play. And he said, yeah. And him and his brother traveled and mom went back to nursing school. And I think that they wanted him to travel. He was causing ruckus. Dad thought he was selling drugs out of the house, threatened to change the locks. And mom was like, you changed the locks, I'm leaving. Dad, this is the funniest thing. Dad put a recording device on the phone to catch Richard selling drugs out of the house or to see what he was up to. And mom listened to the recordings and caught dad cheating.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
That is classic.
I look back at some of these things and I'm just like, oh my gosh.
So Richard grows up in less than perfect circumstances as well.
Oh yeah. At this time, mom is an RN. She's making good money. Dad wants to pursue his dreams as a photographer, quits his contracting job and goes and starts being a photographer and living his best life.
And how old was Richard when all this was going down?
High school. I mean, he started traveling at 15. So I think he was like probably 16, 17. 16 or 17.
And when did mom find out about dad's affair?
Probably around there, between 16, 17, 18.
Okay, when he was at one of his homes, so he wasn't traveling at that point when dad thought he was selling drugs.
Yeah.
Okay, so
he was home at that point.
Okay.
And I think that's, they wanted him to go travel because they couldn't handle him. Like, it was breaking up their marriage. Dad was too hard, mom was too soft. Dad would say, do your chores before you leave. And mom would say, oh, just go ahead. Dad would say, be home by 1 o'clock. He'd sneak in at 3.
So Richard's not having the best example of a home life.
No.
And no, golly, it's like not even in both of your cases, but for different reasons entirely, no role models, parental role models at all. Holy crap, that's insane. No, or marital role models. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing, is it's no one showed you how to be parents or spouses.
And meanwhile, at my house, my mom's still with Vic. She was with him for 25 years, but never married him, because if she married him, all of her benefits would get taken away. My dad was a pilot when he passed, and she got very well taken care of and got a lot of really good benefits. But if she married, all of her benefits would be taken away. And so she financially, she could not get married.
You said that they were together for 25. So in the past tense, I should ask, is your mom still alive?
My mom is. He passed away, gosh, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago.
So they were together until he died.
Yeah, on and off, pretty much on, but he left her with nothing. He left her with nothing, and his kids took everything, and my mom was the other woman to them, you know? Right. So
she's the other woman, and he's Vic the dick.
Yeah.
Wow.
Big 5-year-old, I told you so.
Let's get back to Richard, though. So he graduates from high school.
He doesn't have a diploma.
He didn't get a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm. Has all the credits, mom says. But never got a diploma because he wasn't at one place, and parents never took the time to gather all the credits from all these different places and submit them to.
Wow.
He does not have a diploma.
So was hockey plan A through Z? Was that the idea? He was just going to be a professional hockey player, and then if that didn't work out, too bad.
Pretty much.
When did you guys meet? What year?
We met, it was a week before my 21st birthday, so we met in 2001.
2001. Let's hear about how you met.
We actually met at a Kid Rock concert.
Kid Rock concert.
Right? I know. Him and his friend were sitting in the row in front of us, and he turned around and asked me for a lighter, and I said, I'll give you the lighter if you share with me whatever you're lighting with it. And that's how we met. And we started talking, and he said, how old are you? And it's a week from my 21st birthday. I'm like, I'm 21.
Yeah.
And he's like,
I rounded up.
Yeah, totally. It's a week. He's like, can I buy you a beer? And I was like, no, I'm good. And so we hang out this whole concert. He says, can I get your phone number? I said, yeah, sure. So I gave him my phone number, and then he says, can I walk you to your car? And I'm with my girlfriends, and I'm like, no, I'm good. And he's like, no, let me walk you to your car. And I was like, no, I'm good, really. I don't want you to walk me to my car. And he didn't need to know this at this time. I still don't know if he even knows. I'm sure he probably does. My kids know I told him this story. I did not want him to walk me to my car because my car doors were broken, and I have to climb through the trunk to unlock my doors. And I didn't want him to see me climb through my trunk.
Literally through the trunk of the car?
I had a VW Golf. So it was a hatchback. Okay. So I could get the hatch open. But I mean, and I wasn't doing it. I made my girlfriends do it. But still, I did not want him to see me like try and get into my car. So that's the reason why I didn't let him walk me to my car. Else I would have. But I was also like, that was kind of badass of me. Like, no, I don't need you to walk me to my car. Like,
yeah.
So it just set the tone of like, so. And
probably
he
took it as you're playing hard to get.
I think so. Oh, and he had just gotten home, I think like a month before that, from playing hockey in Canada and like getting paid to play kind of hockey.
Oh.
So
he was making money at hockey.
Once he got older, yeah.
How old was he at this point?
He was 21. He's okay. 6 months older than me.
Okay.
So okay. I gave him my number. He calls me the next day. And I'm like freaking out. I'm like, oh my gosh. He called like, don't you wait 3 days? Like, why are you calling me the next day? Like, so he called me the next day. He asked me out, and I just said, well, next weekend is my birthday, and I'm going out with my sister and my girlfriends, and, like, why don't you come out with us? And he's like, it's your birthday. And I said, yeah. And he's like, so you're turning 22? I was like, no, here's the thing. I'm turning 21. It was like, we met a week before my birthday, like, whatever. And so he said, all right. So the next weekend, we go out for my birthday.
So you get, he calls you the next day, and you go out that next week. How long until you guys, I mean, I know that it was ordained of God and everything. We've already decided that. But how long after that were you guys exclusive? Was it pretty quick?
Yeah, it was pretty quick. And I guess looking back, like, I guess maybe one of my first, it was, it, we were exclusive really quick, but it was also really easy to, like, not put out quick and set boundaries because he lived so far away. And okay. we weren't at, like, stay the night status. Like, it was a good month before I think we had sex. So we go out for my birthday. We're out. We're at the bar. We're having fun and with my sisters and my friends. And we see some old friends that we grew up with in this small Tolleson town. And we were like, hey, haven't seen you in like 5, 6, 7 years. With who you here with? They're there with Richard. We all know the same people. It was a very small world. Like, we ran in the same circles without knowing it.
Well, and part of that was because he was probably absent for a lot of that.
He was playing hockey.
So if he hadn't been playing hockey, you guys might have known each other. Would you have gone to the same high school?
No, but rival schools.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, very small world.
Very small world. And so I'm like, oh, it's meant to be. Like, we all know
of course.
And like, do you know this person? And oh, my brother. And like, oh yeah. And so my older sister is friends with his friend's older sisters. And it was just like, it's meant to be. We're from the same place. We all know each other. And
it's
so
divine providence. You're supposed to be together. God put us here together on purpose.
Yeah. So, and we're like, of all places, we met at a concert. Like, how ironic is that? So we're dating and we're both 21 at this point, probably 6 months into our relationship. It's probably my first red flag. We broke up at 6 months. He's still living on that side of town. I'm living on the other side of town. So it's like a 30 to 40 minute commute to each other's houses. So it's like, if you're coming to hang out, you're staying the night. Mm-hmm. And I'm living with my two sisters at the time. We're renting a house. Oh no, my sister bought a house. And so we're all living together and he's staying the night at my house and I have to wake up and go to work. And he wants to get intimate before I go to work. And I'm like, I've already woken up late. I can't, I don't have time. And so I left and it was just like one of those, sorry, love ya, don't have time. Get into my car and about 5-10 minutes into my ride to work, I get a phone call and he just reams me a new asshole. You show me no affection. I need more intimacy. And you don't even love me. I feel so rejected. And we need to take a break. And I said, a break? I don't do this break shit. Like, we're either breaking up or we're going to figure this out. And he's like, well, I don't know what to do. And I said, you, like, call a spade a spade. I said, you're breaking up with me because I didn't have sex with you this morning. And he said, no, it's not. No, it's not. It's about the intimacy. And I said, that's kind of funny because you've never brought it up before. I didn't have time to have sex with you before I went to work. And so you're breaking up with me. It's because I didn't have sex with you. No, that's not what it is. I said, well, it is. We're breaking up.
Okay. All right. But then 6 months later, you say no, which I have to ask this question. And I'm going to tell you why I asked this question, because I've talked about this before. My ex, Trinity, fake name, Trinity and I, the only thing we ever really fought about was sex. And it wasn't just she didn't have time in the morning. She didn't ever have time or desire or anything else. And so it was once every month or so. So prior to this sexless morning, how was the sex life before that?
Every time we saw each other.
Okay. So he's just being a baby. Sorry.
100%.
Throwing a fit. Richard, you were being a baby. All right. Mm-hmm. All right, so you break up, or you're on a break, or whatever you want.
Oh no, we break up because I'm like, I'm not doing this. Like, let's take a break. Shit. Like, I called him out, and he didn't like that. And so we break up, and he's calling my work. He's sending me flowers. He's totally like calls me and says, "Hey, I've got like baseball tickets. Let's go to the baseball game." And I'm like, "No, I'm not doing anything with you." I think we broke up. It was like a good 3 weeks. Until I saw him the next time. And think about like trying to like do all the my mind was processing in getting ready for this call. And I thought of like, so 3 weeks later, we run into each other at another show, another concert. And ironically, looking back, I just started laughing. Looking back at the concert that we ran into each other at, we went to go see a band called Slightly Stupid. And now I look back and I was like, that was me. I was completely slightly motherfucking stupid. Like, why did I just do that? Like, so we see each other at this show. And of course we're drinking, we're smoking pot, everybody's having a good time. Boom, end up together, end up hooking up. And so I'm like, all right, like, we can work on this. We hooked up that night. He went his way. I went my way. And he's like, come on, let's just make it work. And I said, all right, fine. So the next weekend, he took me out on a date. And he brought me home. And I just said, he's like, can I come in? And I was like, yeah, but you can't stay the night. And he's like, it's late. And I have to drive across town. I said, okay, fine. If you come in, you're sleeping on the couch. And he's like, I'm not sleeping on no fucking couch. Like, he's too proud. I don't sleep on anybody's couch. I said, you're sleeping on the couch if you come in. So he came in. He started on the couch. And true him style, by the end of the night, he was in my bed. And never looked back. Like, that was just the start of us. And the start of 18 years.
So, all right. Let me see if I got the timeline right. So you've been with him 5-6 months. You break up with him because he had his heart broken because you didn't have sex with him while you were already late for work or whatever. And just 3 weeks later, you're at a concert. Mm-hmm. You see each other. Mm-hmm. You hook up. Mm-hmm. Then a week later, you're on a date. And you say you sleep on the couch. He finagles his way into your bed. And next thing you know, here we are on my crazy divorce. No matter how you slice it, this is kind of a whirlwind at this point. So you're into your relationship just 6 or 7 months. What happens next?
We did the shuffle back and forth for a good year, maybe year and a half. And my sister at this time that I was living with, who owned the house, she was getting married. And her fiance at that time had just graduated college. And he got a job, and his job started him in Huntington Beach, California. So they were moving. She was getting married and she was moving.
Yeah. Had to sell the house.
Actually, no, she still has it to this day.
Well, good for her.
Yeah. She still has it to this day. So the plan was we were going to get a friend to move in, and me and my other sister were going to stay in the house. Well, then something fell apart. I'm like, I am not moving back at my mom's. Like, no way. So I talked to him and I'm like, here's my options. Like, I need to move back to my mom's. Like, where are we going from here? We've been together for a year and a half. Like, where are we going from here? Like, because I need to make a decision. I either need to get my own place. I need to move back to my mom's. I need to find a roommate. And at this time, in between, he bought a house and he had two roommates. So he bought a house. He has two roommates. And he's like, why don't you move in here? And I said, well, you need to talk to your roommates first and make sure that's okay. Like, I'm not moving in somewhere I'm not wanted. Like, it needs to be a household decision. Like, you need to talk to your roommates. So everybody was fine with it. So I move in. And so probably 6 months, we've probably been together for 2 years at this point. And his job transfers him to Las Vegas. And
what is he doing? I mean, what does a non-high school graduated hockey player do for a living?
He does auto glass. So
like replaces broken windshields? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, any piece of glass on your vehicle is what he does.
Okay.
So, and when he got back from playing hockey, that's what all of his friends were doing. So it was just an easy job. He got it. Like, it was waiting for him. So he kind of just fell into the industry. And being the type of person that he is, he's very successful at it. I mean, he could sell ice to an Eskimo. I mean, he's a class act. He is a charmer. He will get you to do anything. He can talk you into anything. He talked me into 18 years. Let's be honest.
Did you know you can get divorced without hiring an attorney? Let OurDivorce.com guide you through our three-step process for a simple flat fee. Visit OurDivorce.com to learn more and get started today.
By the way, Lauren, I got to tell you, I don't know why this just struck me for some reason. It's taken me, I think you told me you guys met like 20 minutes ago in this recording, and it just dawned on me. That means you're 42.
I will be 42 in April.
I mean, and I should have known that. I mean, you were saying you got like 15-year-old kids or whatever. And I'm like, yeah. But the math just hit me. You do not look 42. So congratulations
on
that. I don't know why that. I just did the math and I'm going, what? No way. So
I'll be 42 in April.
All right. So let's keep the story going. This is great.
So he gets his job transfers him to Las Vegas. And his friends are going to stay in the house and keep renting it. And he wants me to go with him. And I'm like, I don't move out of state for a boyfriend. Like, I need more commitment. Like, I've never left Arizona. This is crazy. And you know what? Like, I have morals. Like, I look back and I'm like, morals? I'm already living with him. Who cares what state it's in? So anyways, I was just like, I'm not moving out of state with my boyfriend. That's silly. That's way too much of a commitment. Like, I need more of a commitment.
Even though Vegas is just a couple hours away.
Yeah, four.
Oh, is it four? Okay.
Yeah. So he's literally packing his car, and I'm thinking, what the fuck is going on? Like, I still don't know what, like, I guess he's just going to come back and forth. Like, I'm going to stay here. He's going to go there. And he just says, can I talk to you for a minute? And we're in the garage doing stuff, me and his friends and him. And I said, yeah. So he takes me in the bedroom. He sits me down on the bed. And I start crying because I think this is the moment he's breaking up with me and I've got to move out. He's going to Vegas and he's not ready to get married. And I just start crying and he takes out a ring. And he just says, will you marry me? And nothing special. It was just a quick, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm getting married. Like, this is great, but I'm moving. What am I doing? Like, it was just a whirlwind. And so then we moved to Vegas, and I knew that he had impulse issues, but I think this was the first time that I like really recognized it. We had a change jar. Everybody has a change jar. We lasted 6 months in Vegas. That's it. We moved back home. It was too much, too dirty, too transient. Like, it was just, it was very, and he was spending all of his time at the casino, and I was working my ass off, and I was like, F this place. Let's go back home. So we went back home, and we were home for a while, and we noticed that the only thing stopping us from getting married was money. Like, we didn't have money. We couldn't afford the wedding that my sister had or my older other sisters. And his mom's working as an RN. His dad's traveling all over for these horse shows. And I said, F it, let's go to Vegas. Let's just go to Vegas. We'll still have the same. I still had the dress. My mom's cousin was in charge of the high rollers at that time. So he got us like the honeymoon suite. Like, he hooked us up at the MGM. And so we got married at the MGM Chapel. And I just said, our friends will come. It's Vegas. Like, we're 22, 23 years old. And any excuse to get to Vegas, they're coming. Like, let's just go. So we got married in Vegas, got home. And I don't know. I don't remember how we got to it. But he wanted to go and he wanted to start his own business. So we started our own business. He got his LLC. We did all that. And we move to California. We moved to Huntington, where my sister is. We moved to Huntington, and I'm like, this is great. Like, we're married. My sister's married. We're very close. We're 14 months apart. Lived together our whole lives until she got married. And this is great. Well, then my sister's husband gets transferred. I think they went to Oklahoma. But, so we're in Huntington Beach. We're there maybe 2 weeks, and I find out I'm pregnant. And, I mean, I must have conceived our wedding weekend. Like, I was pregnant. We got married, and I was pregnant.
Oh, okay. And,
yeah,
not right planned, away. But was it a big shock?
It wasn't planned. Well, we weren't trying, but we didn't care. I mean, I had been on birth control since I was 18 years old. So I was on birth control all the time. And, like, once we got married, you know, the OB's like, you've been on birth control for so long that it could take a couple months for it to get out of your system and get pregnant. And so I think I stopped the pill. Like, I finished the last pack, and I think it was, like, 2 weeks before our wedding. So I just didn't start a new pack. And then we were just like, if it happens, it happens. Like, we weren't trying, but we weren't avoiding it either.
I avoided it for a long time. So that's why I'm just like, oh, couples that get married and are instantly okay with it. Well, hey, hats off to you. That wasn't me.
So we get pregnant. We move. We're still in Huntington Beach. I think we lasted there 6 weeks, 6 months. We moved back home. We moved into his childhood home, the home that he grew up in.
What caused you to move home? What you say you lasted this long there?
But he got bored. I mean, he got bored. And I was pregnant. I've always worked. I wasn't working at that time. I was his, you know, I would go to work with him and I would like do the paperwork. And you're outside, it's hot, I'm pregnant, I'm nauseous. And he's just like, you're annoying, I need to work. And I'm like, take me home. I don't feel good. It's hot. And he's like, how are we going to make money? And I'm like, I don't care. Figure it out. It was like just one of those things. And he got bored and a friend of a friend found a thing where you could buy cart, like a train cart full of like scratch and dent furniture, like high end, like Ashley furniture. Like you can buy it for dirt cheap and resell it. So he's like, we're going to do that. We're going to invest. I think it was like $5,000. We are going to buy this scratch and dent cart full of furniture. We're going to go home and we're going to fix it up and we're going to sell it. Meanwhile, he's keeping the business running in Huntington. His brother moves out there to run it.
It's a glass business.
Glass business. And we get this furniture and it is no scratch and dent. It is like broken. Like, I don't think we sold one piece of it. I don't, like, really? To be honest, I don't think we sold one piece of it. So he gets back to Phoenix. We're in Phoenix. I'm pregnant. And he starts working on building the business in Phoenix. Had my daughter March of 2005. And we're just trucking along. We're doing the business. I'm working in dental. I had been in dental since out of high school. So working in a dental office, just everywhere. Had my daughter, like I said, in March 2008. He's doing his glass thing. I'm supporting him. I'm doing the books. And my daughter was about a year and a half old. And he had a business partner. And his business partner's wife and I became friends. And she came to me and said, Richard got a pill problem. I said, what are you talking about? And she said, he's abusing Vicodin or whatever he could get his hands on, Percocet. And I said, what? No. I didn't believe her. I did not believe her. I mean, my daughter's a year and a half old. We're successful. We just bought a home. I'm working. He's working. And we're happy. Like, why would you do that? So she's like, if you don't believe me, I'll tell you where he hides it. And I was like, what? And she said, he hides it in the sprinkler box. And I said, shut up. You're lying. Sure enough, I go check the sprinkler box and there's pills in the sprinkler box.
Wow.
Yeah. And she swore me to secrecy. She's like, you can't throw me under the bus. It'll cause problems in my marriage. The only reason I know is because my husband tells me. And if he finds out that I told you, like, so I protected her. Because I was just like, you know what? You're protecting me. I'll protect your marriage. Like, I get it. Like, you're doing me the favor. And I still don't know till this day if he knows that's how I found out. But
so I had to find out.
Yeah. So I had to figure out a way to get into that sprinkler box. And like with him knowing that I'm getting into the sprinkler box. And it was a hot summer day. And I got a year and a half year old. And I'm like, she wants to play in the sprinklers. Let's turn the sprinklers on. So I go open the sprinkler box. And I said, what the F is this? And he denies it. And I'm just like, I'm not stupid. I start going through shit. I like ripped apart his truck. How long has this been going on? And he's just like, it's fine. I'll quit. And I just said, it's got to stop. It's got to stop now. Like, we are too old for this shit. We've got a kid. We've got a successful business. I've got a good job. Like, stop it. And if you do it again, I will leave. Wow. Do it again, I will leave.
You just brought up some interesting points. So when you met, literally smoking pot together at the Kid Rock concert, you smoked pot for a while together. I assume you did that throughout your...
Oh, yeah. Till I got pregnant.
Your dating. So, okay. Did he stop when you got pregnant that you know of? Or was he still smoking pot?
Oh, no. He still was.
Okay. So, and you were okay with that, I assume. Yeah. I mean, did you do that?
I didn't care.
Pot's no big deal. Mm-mm. But the Vicodin was, that was crossing a boundary.
The opiates were definitely crossing a boundary to me.
Okay. I wanted to make sure that you both hadn't gone like total cold turkey on any sort of drugs at all. It's just, but that was a boundary crossing.
That was a boundary for me.
Okay. All right. So you say, I'm leaving. If you don't quit, I'm leaving. Or if you ever do it again, I'm leaving.
Yeah, both. And so he got clean. And meanwhile, I didn't tell anybody. I hid it from everybody. I didn't tell my family. I didn't tell his family. I didn't talk about it with our friends. And at this point, we had been together for so long. His friends were my friends. And he had the same friends since middle school. And so they all grew up together. And I left all my friends. And all I had was him and his friends. And their girlfriends and their wives. And so in order for him to help him get clean, we went to Northern California. We moved to Northern California. Daughter's a year and a half old. His parents are living in Northern California. They had moved there to take care of her mother, who had passed away. And we were there for maybe 6 months. Again, got bored, came back home. We were living in a condo at this point. And then we started at the glass business again, went back to work. I went back to work at a dental office. So now we're like 2007 and 2008-ish. Markets crashed. Houses are getting foreclosed on left and right. The market's super cheap. Our business is very successful. So we take advantage of it. We buy a house. We bought a house in 2008. I'm pregnant, very pregnant. So I'm packing the house to move into this new house that we bought. And while pregnant, the house is finally done and built and we sign on it. My son was born May of 2008. And so I've got this 3.5-year-old and a baby. We moved when my son was 5 weeks old. Both deliveries were total drama. My son ended up in the ICU for a couple days after delivering both C-sections. Came home without my baby on Mother's Day. I mean, it was just a nightmare. So we are literally moving when my baby's 5 weeks old. Total postpartum, breastfeeding. Have to hire movers because I can't help. Because I've just had a
June
C-section.
In Phoenix.
Yes, just had a C-section.
365 degrees.
Yeah. And I find empty pill bottles in the move. And The movers probably thought I was fucking psycho. Because I come in, I'm postpartum, I've got this 5-week-old baby, and I just come in and I tell the movers, just fucking stop. You move, you keep your shit here, I'm moving to the new house. You are not coming with me. How could you do this? I told you if you did this again, I was going to leave. How long has this been going on? And this time it was worse. Like, this time he had to detox. Like, we had to, like, take him someplace. He was that addicted. It had been going on for a while. Meanwhile, he's had a problem with porn this whole time. So that was a problem in our marriage. And
like, let me ask you about that. He looked at porn and you had a problem with him looking at porn? Or he was, like, addicted to porn and couldn't stop? There's a big difference, I think.
I don't know. I think that he was addicted to it and he couldn't stop because he knew how much it hurt me. And he couldn't not do it. Like, he didn't have enough self-control and self-awareness to be like, you know what, this really bothers my wife. I probably shouldn't do it and then not do it. He's always been asked for forgiveness, not permission. Always.
Okay.
I mean, he grew up that way. So the porn was even worse when he was in his addiction. And now I understand why the porn got to where it got. And so I'm here parking and my daughter's in preschool. And I'm at the doctor's office with him all day with a 5-week-old baby. 6-week-old baby breastfeeding in between, sitting there with him while he detoxes, and they're getting him on Suboxone, and it was a pretty bad time. And I said, I protected you the first time, I'm not going to do it the second. I told my family, I told his family, I told my friends, I told his friends. I said, we need to get our asses back to church. We started going to church, just a non-denominational.
You didn't break up. You didn't end it.
No. I didn't do what I said I was going to.
Who can blame you? You've got an infant and a toddler. That's a...
Well, and, so I felt stuck.
And you loved him.
Yeah. And I wanted to help him. I wanted him to be better. I knew he could be better. I knew his potential, and I wanted that for him.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted that for him. So... we'd have a good year, we'd have a bad year, then we'd have a good... It was just on and off, and I didn't know what was going on with him. He was just... Nothing was ever good enough. We had a very active sex life, but he would tell me things that... It's not the quantity, it's the quality, is what he would tell me. And...
What? Yeah. Basically, you're not good in bed?
Yeah, I mean, what else does that mean? Yeah, he would say things. One time in church, he cursed me out in church under his breath. We're sitting there at church and I'm just looking forward and he's like facing me and he's cursing me out in my ear. And I'm just like, we're in church. Like at least wait till we get home. Like we are in church. But man, if he doesn't get his way, he's gonna give it to you. He's gonna let you know it.
So I want to just make sure I know the timeline at this point.
So now we are, let's say, 2010, late 2010, 2011. Business is going good. We're very active in church. Then the oil boom happens in North Dakota. So he gets bored. My brother at the time is driving oil trucks up in North Dakota. And Richard gets bored and he says, I want to do something different. I'm going to go get my CDL. I'm going to go up and make some money and I'm going to drive oil trucks. I said, all right. So he gets his CDL. I'm working part-time for the business. I go in part-time and do the books and help out the secretary. He's going to start traveling to North Dakota. So I stay here. I run the business. He's traveling back and forth. He gets to North Dakota. And within like the first month, he's like, truck driving is not for me, but they also don't have a glass guy that can do what I can do here. So he starts a glass company in North Dakota. So he's doing this probably 6-7 months and it's summertime. Let's go on a road trip. So we go on like a 10-day road trip. The kids want to see where he's traveling to. I want to see where he's traveling to. My brother and sister-in-law at the time are living in Boise, Idaho. His dad was in Montana doing horse shows. And then we were going to hit up North Dakota. And we knew we wanted to leave Arizona. It was starting to get very crowded. It was starting to be not safe for the kids, like not a place we wanted to raise the kids in. So this whole road trip was also going to be like, where do we want to go?
Okay.
Where do we want to move? And it was between Boise or Montana. I'm an Arizona girl. Like, you're pushing it with Idaho winter. There's no way I am going to deal with Montana winter.
Yeah, that's cold.
Yeah. So, and my brother and sister-in-law were here in Boise. My brother was also traveling. And so it was just the perfect place to be at that time for me and my sister-in-law. We helped each other out. When my brother and Richard were traveling, we were total sister wives. Like, we meal swapped, we carpooled, we just helped each other out majorly. So it's awesome. So it's 2012 and we're in Idaho, where we moved to Boise, raised our kids here.
Let me guess. Started a glass business.
He's still traveling to North Dakota. He did that he traveled to North Dakota for about 5 years. Four or five years. Yeah. And got sick of it. Sold it for pennies because he was so sick of it. He wasn't patient. He didn't want to. I mean, it expanded to like 200%. I mean, it was a very successful business and it just got old. And throughout the 4 years, he would try to convince me to move there. And I was just like, no way.
North Dakota.
No. And it was man farms. It was man camps. Like, there was nothing. No, it wasn't an option. Yeah. And so he ends up selling it and starts a glass business in Idaho. In between him selling it and starting a glass company here, I had this genius idea. I said, I want to get a small camper because I'm a stay-at-home mom at this point. I've probably been home maybe 5-6 years. I said, I want to get a small camper, like a cheap one, and redo it myself, like as a project. Like, we can go camping in it. We can go hunting in it. Like, I just want to do it. This motherfucker, he's always go big or go home. He's like, we can make a business out of it. He gets this like old 50s, very cool. And they resell for like crazy. If you
the Airstream?
No, it was a 1950 Alma.
I don't know those, but okay.
And it was like 50, it was ginormous. And I'm thinking, I just want this like little thing for just us fans, for just our little family. And he gets this, like, I mean, it's ginormous. So I'm like, all right, let's do it. Like, I'm always like, all right, well, here's another idea. Let's just do it. So we start ripping apart this trailer. We're running out of money. I said, I need to go back to work. Like, the kids are old enough. They want to ride the bus. They don't even like me taking them to school. They love riding the bus. They pack their own lunches. Like, the kids are independent. I need to go back to work. Like, we need money. No, we're fine. We're fine. I don't want you going back to work. Well, then, about 6 months later, we start getting notices in the mail that you got to catch up on your car payment or it's going to go to default. And I said, okay, I'm going back to work. So I go back to work. I start working at the local hospital here and working part-time. Love my job. And I think that was really the last 5 years of our marriage was really the beginning of it. And meanwhile, we're in and out of marriage counseling this whole time.
Okay. So this has not been a smooth, we know it hasn't been totally smooth based on everything you've told us, but does he appear at least to be trying? I mean, you're going to counseling, so.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As far as you're concerned, you both have issues. You're both trying to work on them or moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, divorce is not an option.
Yeah.
I go back to work, love my job. I start getting independent, getting my groove back, and he's not liking it. He does not want me to work. He starts the business in Boise. It starts getting successful. He's like, okay, you can quit. And I'm like, what? I don't want to quit. Like, I love this job. Like, I'm out talking to people. Like, I've been here for 2 or 3 years. Like, I know the patients. I know, like, no, it gets me out of the house and it's extra money. It keeps me independent. and he did not like it. And my job was always a fight. I started working 3 days a week, and then they needed me more. So then I had the option of going full-time or working 4 days a week. And I wanted to go to five. He didn't. So we compromised. I went to four. But then after like 3 years of me working there, he doesn't remember. It was never he was never a discussion of me going back to work. I just did it. And I'm like, no, I kind of had to. Like, we were getting default papers. Like, we were broke. We didn't talk about you working 4 days a week. It was only supposed to be part-time. I said, no, we had a huge conversation about it. And I wanted to go five. It just wasn't convenient for him. And it was very threatening to him.
Yeah, he wanted to be in charge so he could control you.
100%. So then one day, after I'd been there for like years, I would wake up to him going through my phone at night. I would fall asleep to go to bed, and I would wake up and he'd put my phone down really quick. He'd leave it open. Or sometimes I would wake up in the morning and I'd turn my phone on and whatever the last app that he was in, he left it open. So I could tell he was going through my phone. And I said, why are you going through my phone? And he said, I'm not. But you can't argue with him. You can't. Like, you will not win. I used to be like, let's just agree to disagree. And no, there is no agree to disagree. You have to agree. So one day I'm at work and we're doing some hiring and we are getting these resumes. And I don't really go on social media. But we had a shared Facebook at that time, which I never went on it. He did. So we were like getting resumes and stuff. So I'm like, well, let's look these people up on Facebook and see like what they look like and if we want to bring them in. And so I go to the search bar in the Facebook and it drops down the history. Well, Richard had searched multiple phone numbers that were in my phone. Every single one of my coworkers, he looked up. He was searching for me or who was in my circle that he had never met, even though I'd come home and talk to him about him all the time. So
wow.
He's paranoid. I literally go to work. I come home. I make dinner. I do the kids and I go to bed. Like, I don't know what you're so paranoid about. Like, I don't feel like a priority. And I'm like, you and the kids are my priority. Why do you think I went back to work? Oh, why do you think that I didn't get it.
But I'm going to go out here on a limb and say that he's projecting.
Yeah, probably. I still to this day don't know. I think there were some times in the marriage too, where I'd be like, what are you doing? You're doing something because you're acting guilty. You're being a huge asshole. And you're only an asshole when you feel guilty about something. I would straight up be like, what are you doing? What are you hiding from me? Like, let's just talk about it. You're doing something, I can tell. And he'd deny it. So I'm working and he's just getting more and more controlling. He doesn't like that I talk to my sister. Me and my sisters are very close. My whole family's very close. He'd call us a bunch of bullies. He'd call us the wolf pack. He would. Yeah, I mean, he did not like how close we were. So, fast forward, we're not getting along at this time either, and the kids are starting to see it. My daughter's probably 7th grade, my son like 4th probably, or 5th. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to stick it out for the kids, like, I can get through this once the kids are 18, like, I'll be gone. And it got to the point where he would go for hours. If he got upset, he would go for hours and there was no escaping. At this time, towards the end of me leaving, he's blocking me in the room so I can't get out and just yelling at me. I would go to bed and he would come in and out of the room for hours yelling at me and then he'd leave. 20 minutes later, he'd come back in, he'd yell at me. Throwing mattresses, like I would get up to leave and he'd throw my mattress across the room, punching holes in the wall, kicking my dressers.
It's like childish tantrums.
And I would even say, like, you're throwing a tantrum like a child. But when he was in that fit of rage, there was no compromising, there was no talking to him, there was no, you could not You couldn't talk to him. You were damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, you could not, there was no reasoning with him. You could not have a conversation with him like that.
Divorce doesn't have to be complicated. Our Divorce.com's three-step procedure provides a simple and affordable process that you can follow at your own pace. Save thousands by visiting ourdivorce.com today.
It's funny, Lauren, because I've said this before. I don't really have a temper. I don't get angry like that. And it's very foreign to me when I hear about other people that, like, just they lose control. I remember this one time early on in my relationship with Trinity. This is before we got married. We were in a fight over something. And we didn't fight a lot, but we fought about something. And I was over at her apartment. And there was something just on the edge of the counter. And she walked down the hall angry with me. And I turned around and my arm hit it. And it knocked off the... It was like a pill bottle or something. Nothing broke. It just fell on the floor and made noise. And she came around the corner and she goes, "I think you'd better leave if you're going to be violent." And I'm going, "What?" And I hear stories like that. And I'm going, so I get booted out for accidentally knocking something off the counter. And Richard's punching holes in the wall and throwing mattresses across the room. And you're still...
slightly stupid.
Fascinating. You know? This is nuts to me, by the way. And for those listening, I haven't broken in and said a lot during this one because the story itself is so, this is, in Mormonism, you hear the term long suffering. I don't know if that's in other religions, but you're very long suffering with this guy. Patient isn't the word, it's long suffering. So,
yeah.
All right, let's keep it going.
He was very good at trying to make you feel like it's your fault. And he would tell me things like, "The only reason I'm with you is because you're hot and we have kids together. Do you know how many women customers hit on me on a daily? Do you know how many women would love to be with somebody like me?"
Okay, he's a dick.
"Do you know how I get so respected at work and I get home and nobody respects me? I get hit on all the time. I could go out and get it. Do you know why married men cheat?" It got to the point where I figured out my only way to escape when he lost his shit, because they just lose control. I could go lay in one of my kids' beds, and that was my safe zone. He would not go in there and yell at me in front of the kids. He wouldn't do it. God forbid he'd look bad. So that started...
Okay, so he had a limit.
Yeah. So I figured that out. And so... I started going into one of my kids' rooms, and the older my kids got, I always said, "I'm staying for the kids. At this point, my daughter's like 14, five more years, I'll be good." And it got to the point where, I didn't want to cry. It got to the point where my daughter just said, "Mom, why are you putting up with this? Why are you letting Dad talk to you like this? And that is not right." And I said, she's 14 years old and this is her dad. And there were boundaries in our marriage that you don't hit and you don't cheat. There's no coming back from that. And no matter what, when we fight, you don't use the D word. And we never did. And the last 2 years of our marriage, he started telling me he wanted a divorce. And still, I never said it. I refused to. And my son, one night, he was out of control. And again, I went into my kid's room and he actually came in that night and he's pushing me. I'm acting like I'm asleep and he's pushing on me to wake me up and said, "Lauren, come talk to me. I said, "No, stop. I'm trying to sleep. You're going to wake our daughter up." And I wouldn't go. I just ignored him. And he pulled me by the leg and tried to like pull me off the bed.
I shouldn't laugh, but I can picture the scenario. It's just stupid.
It's so stupid. And he gets mad because he can't get me out of that room. And he goes apeshit. And he, for the first time, my son heard him say he wanted a divorce. And every night that he would have these manic episodes, I would go in and check on my kids and make sure they're sleeping. They didn't hear nothing. Make sure they're okay. And this night I came into my daughter's room and she just said, Mom, I'm okay. You need to go to Lane. And at this point, I think he's in probably fourth or fifth grade. And he's bawling and he doesn't cry. And I said, what is wrong? Like, and he heard his dad say that he wanted a divorce. And he just said, I don't know what I'd do if my parents got divorced and you guys can't get, just bawling and so terrified of us getting divorced. And I just said, well, shit. One's telling me to leave. One's devastated. Dad wants a divorce. And so we stuck it out for a whole nother year. And it's just getting worse and worse. And I'm finding my backbone. I'm sticking up for myself. I'm learning that just ignoring him is all I can do because there's no reasoning with him. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And the more I stick up for myself, the louder and bigger he gets. And I can't wake my kids up. I got to work tomorrow. There were so many reasons for the things that I did.
Well, so let's make sure we got the timeline. So we're 2019, 2020.
We are 2019. 2019, things were super bad. We bought another house, and my whole family's like, why are you buying a house? Like, your marriage is in shambles. And I'm like, you know what? Regardless, this is an investment for me. If something happens and we get divorced, I'll need that money. Me buying a house is not going to go against me. Whether we get divorced or not, I need the house. And it's a financial investment for me if we get divorced, whatever. And so porn is still a huge problem. Sex is still a huge problem. It's 2019. We bought a house. In between Christmas and New Year's, my sister that I'm close with and her kids and her husband came to visit. There was a huge blow up between him and my sister, which happens every time we all get together. Every time she came to Boise to visit, they left early. She was a huge threat to him. He didn't like me talking to him. He didn't like how close we were. Your family doesn't need to be knowing our business. And so anyways, they get into a huge blow up. They leave. He's still pissed off at me. He's calling me and my sister bullies, and we bullied him. And I'm like, if you stick up for yourself, then you're a bully. Pretty much. So they leave. And usually he gets over it real quick. This time he didn't. And a couple days after they left, it was after New Year's. He got mad. And we got into a huge blow up. And again, I just laid there and took it. Or sat there and took it. And he said, again, he wanted a divorce, which he had been threatening for the last 2 years. And he said, I have to work tomorrow, which is a Saturday. And he usually did work Saturday or Sundays. And he said, I want a divorce. I don't know what you want. You can either stay and work this out or you can get out. And I guess I'll know my decision when I get home from work tomorrow. I just said, heard it before. So we go to bed. And we wake up, and usually after a night like that, we wake up and it's either him being apologetic or him giving me the silent treatment for a couple days and me not giving it any attention. And this morning he woke up and he was still pissed off at me. And he just gets this anger in his eyes, and he just gives you this look that's just, it's terrifying. And he just looked at me and he just said, again, I guess I'll know my decision by the time I get home. And I just laid there in the bed and I looked at the ceiling and I just said, what am I doing? It just came over me. Like, what am I doing? Like, I don't want this. And just like that, I just made the decision. All right, it's time. I'm out of here. I'm leaving. And so I went and got the kids and I sat them down and I just said, hey, it's no secret that Dad and I aren't getting along. And we need to spend some time apart right now. And I need you to pack a bag. And we're going to go stay at Grandma's for a little bit until we figure out what's going on. And I said, I kind of need you to hurry because I don't want Dad to come home and see us. It'll hurt his feelings. And really, I was terrified. If he came home while I was packing, I don't think I would have ever been able to leave. And we packed bags, and I fit as much as I could in my car, and I went to my mom's house, and he came home and he just said, I guess you made your decision. I said, I didn't make my decision. You did. I said, you left me a long time ago. And yeah, I think that when my kids cried and cried. And God, I was at my mom's for a good year. So this was January of 2020 I left. And probably about March, at this point we'd been together 17 and a half years, almost 18, married 15, almost 16. Come about March 2020, my daughter says, I think Dad's on dating apps. And I said, what? Like, and still there's no talk of divorce from me. There's no, well, I'm not even saying we're separated. Like, I just need space. Like, just respect my boundaries. Like, you work on you, I'll work on me. And he said, that's not how it works. In a marriage, you can't work on yourself together. You have to do it together. You can't go to counseling and then I go to counseling separate. That's not right. And I said, yes, it is. I said, you work on you, I'll work on me. Let's start dating again. Like, come pick me up for dinner. Like, let's just date each other again. Like, let's start over. Like, we just met. And he just wasn't respecting those boundaries. So come March, my daughter's like, I think Dad's on dating apps. I said, why? She goes, because he'll sit on the couch and he'll swipe and he smiles and then he'll swipe. And I'm like, oh, Dad's definitely on dating apps. But I just let it go. I don't say anything to protect her because I don't want him to accost her for telling me something. And so come April, it's my birthday. And he picks the kids up from my mom's where we're staying. And he comes to pick them up on my birthday to go take them to get something for my birthday. And they get back and they come in the door. And meanwhile, COVID hit March of 2020 in Idaho. So the whole world's freaking out. I'm working at a hospital and dealing with that. And my daughter comes in and she goes, so that was awkward. I said, well, what happened? And she goes, we get in the car and Dad says, I think I'm divorcing your mother. It's my birthday. And now I have to deal with the kids coming in on my birthday. And he's telling the kids this. And meanwhile, he's wanting me to give him an answer. And he wants me to give him permission to move on. And I said, I'm not your mom. I'm not your mom. If you feel like you want to move on, go ahead. I'm choosing me. And therefore, I want to choose us in me choosing me. And I'm not giving you permission to move on. Like, that's not my place. Like, you're a grown-ass man. I'm not your mom. And he pretty much bullied me into giving him permission to move on, which I still didn't. I just said, you make your own decision. You do what you want to do. And so then it was, I gave him permission to move on. I told him it was us. So that's April. So come June of 2020, it's our wedding anniversary weekend. And he's going to Sacramento to visit a friend who actually happens to be in Sacramento. And I said, all right. Well, while you're in Sacramento visiting this friend that we both know, I said, I'm going to go to the house and get some things that I want. And he said, yeah, that's fine. So I go to the house knowing he's not there. And his computer's pulled up and his email's up. And I mean, I don't even need his email to be up. At this point, we've been together for 18 years. I know all of his damn passwords. So I look at the email and it's reservation for a resort. And it's your confirmation for the romantic getaway package. And I was like, what the fuck? So I start looking into it and he's with another woman on our wedding anniversary. Our 16th wedding anniversary, getting couples massages. And I kind of flipped my shit.
Yeah.
I just said, okay, here we go. He had been dating that none of us knew. Me, the kids didn't know. And I just texted him and was like, listen, he was 2 hours away and it took all I had. My girlfriend had to be like, the hell you are. I wanted to get in my car. I wanted to drive down to that resort and I knock on the door.
Yeah.
And
I can understand that, believe me.
And I just called him and I said, I hope she's worth it. And I went to the house. I took more than I wanted. I took the things that I knew that he would want. I took his 65-inch screen TV. I took the modem so he had no internet. I turned the power off because I had been telling him I have been telling him that he needs to put the utilities under his name, and he hadn't. I looked up how much the hotel was, and it was like $954.60. I transferred $954.60 into my account. I saw how much the rental car was. If it was $362.06, I transferred $362.06. I mirrored every charge that he charged that weekend so that he knew you're going to spend that on her, you're going to spend it on your kids. Just to make a statement. And
yeah,
my kids were devastated. I mean, he spent more time with this chick's kids than he did his own.
Yeah, they knew him. I hear that too often.
They knew him. They loved him. They were drawing him pictures. And meanwhile, we had no idea this person existed. I mean, it was flabbergasting. And I just... that was the beginning of the end for me. And
so this is June of 2020.
June of 2020. Yeah. So he had her in my house. He had her in my bed. He had her on my couch. So at this point, I'm like, burn the fucking house down. There's no way I'm moving back into that house. Like,
yep.
If we're going to work this out, which... you know, this is my, you never say never. I would be like, oh, I never. You don't cheat and you don't hit. There's no coming back from that. Well, here I am. Like, we were very married. He cheated. And I was just more hurt that, like, after almost 18 years, it took 4 months. 4 months, and he was in love with somebody else. And he was doing something so heinous to do it on our wedding anniversary. Like, that was just a kick in the gut.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but when I found out that Trinity's first boyfriend that I know of, that they did it in our bed, it was, I mean, just finding out that she was having an affair was a knife in the heart. Mm-hmm. But then finding out that they did it in our bed was like twisting that knife. Mm-hmm. And like you, it's like, I decided to forgive her, but I couldn't sleep on that bed anymore.
Oh, no, he purchased a new bed. I mean, he did all the right things. But...
yeah.
So right after this happened, I think like a week later, he's begging forgiveness and he's just, I'm so sorry and I was stupid and I was selfish. The kids want nothing to do with him. I want nothing to do with him, but I'm still trying to like co-parent with him. And I want to shake him and be like, look at what you're doing to me. Look what you're doing to our family. And I would tell him for like the last 10 years of our marriage, like, why can't you ever be content? Like, look around you. Like, you've got two awesome kids. You've got a wife who has been so nothing but supportive. You've got a successful business. We own a house. Like, look at all the good things that you have in your life. And all you can focus on is what you don't.
Yep.
And I would tell him that, like, you'll never be content. So one time I begged him, I'm like, I need and want you to love me unconditionally. And he said, I do love you unconditionally within reason. I said, that is not unconditional, my friend. That is not unconditional.
Unconditional with reason, within reason.
So it's about a week later. I'm at a friend's house and had a little too much to drink. And I went back to that house and I was like, I'm going to show him what he lost. And I slept with him. And
It was total.
I walked into the house and I said, let's go get in the room. I totally took control and we're doing it because I want to, not because you want me to. And had sex with him and I left. Didn't stay the night, didn't do anything, had sex, put my clothes back on, and I walked out, didn't say nothing. Go home back to my mom's house, and I'm laying there, and I wake up the next morning, I'm like, what the fuck did I just do? Like, he's had sex with another person. And if he's been on dating apps, he's had sex with other people. I know he has. I'm not stupid. He can't go a week without having sex. And so out of my women's intuition, I go and get an STD check, and sure enough, he gave me an STD.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so, I mean, thank God it's take these two pills, you're good. So I call him, and I'm like, I fucking hate you. You gave me an STD. And he's like, no, you didn't. No, I didn't. I said, yeah, you did. Like, I'm not sleeping with nobody. And he said, I know, I can tell. I'm at work when I get the call. And I know that he's panicking, looking. So he keeps texting me all these reasons that I could have had an STD that aren't him. Like, you could have
gotten it. So he's just Googling it.
Yeah, you could have gotten it from your vibrator. Do you wash it every time you use it? Like, you could have gotten it from, do you share underwear with anybody? Like, and I'm just like, dude, you gave me an STD. Like, oh my gosh. Like,
yes, my sisters and I swap it out every month just for fun.
I'm like, you can't give yourself an STD. It's not from my vibrator, okay? So fast forward to, I don't know, November of 2020. At this time, I'm still trying to manage, like, co-parenting. What are we doing with the house? The kids don't want anything to do with the house either. So he hasn't had the kids overnight in 6 months at this point. He finally goes and gets a rental. Our house sits empty. It's up for sale. I'm trying to manage. I was not perfect. We're still having sex with each other. Why? I don't know. Because I was stupid. Like, I look back and I'm just like, I was in survival mode, but I also still wanted to have fun. And the only person I felt comfortable with in that way was him. I didn't want to go have sex with strangers. I didn't want to date. I didn't want to, right. But I still wanted to be satisfied. And I still wanted to, you know, be intimate with somebody. And he's the only person that I trusted. And so the first affair in June of 2020 was, she was number one. And so November of 2020, he's here by himself. He doesn't have any family here. So I make Thanksgiving dinner and I take it to his house because I don't want him to spend Thanksgiving by himself. This is our first holiday separated. Like, let's try and make it normal for the kids. Like, let's just get our shit together for the kids. So we spent Thanksgiving over there, still getting kind of madness. Come December of 2020, we spent Christmas over there. Divorce was final in January of 2021. Shit starts getting crazier. I want to say crazy, but you're probably thinking crazier. Shit starts getting crazy, like, probably February of 2020. Meanwhile,
this 2021,
yeah. I'm trying to set boundaries. Like, I'm trying to get him to respect my boundaries. Still, like, you can't come over here unless I invite you. I don't want to go out with you tonight. He can't take no. He wants what he wants and he will do anything to get it. And that's in all aspects of his life.
Okay, I got to back up for a second. So you're separated now.
I'm still living at my mom's.
You're living at your mom, but you've been separated from Richard for a year in February of 2021. Your divorce is final in January of 21. You guys are still having sex? You're hanging out together and doing it, or no?
No, it was more of like, I'm like friends with benefits. And he's like, he can't do friends with benefits. And I'm like,
but so you, there are benefits then. So, I mean, it is a sexual relationship, even though you're separated and divorced. Mm-hmm. Okay, no judgment here. I think I don't understand that myself. If I'm divorced from someone, I don't want to be with them. Not that I have to hate them, but I mean, if my ex-wife walked in the door right here naked and said, let's go for it, there's no way. So I don't understand.
I'm like that now.
Good for you guys. Yeah. Good for you guys for having a friendly enough relationship that was possible. But
we didn't.
It was fulfilling a need.
And it was convenient. And what man is going to say no to say, come over?
I would.
At that time. So divorce is final January of 2020. I think I probably lost all of 2021. I got into a really dark place. My drinking was out of control. I mean, out of control. I was a mess. I think by this time, and so we're talking January, February, March, he's probably on number five, girl. So I'd set boundaries, I'd say no, and I'd find out about another girl. And I always told him, like, we're not seeing each other, which is fine, but, you know, I'm not having sex with you and other people. If you are sleeping with somebody else, I need to know, because it's like, that's it. And
you already gave me one disease.
Yes. So I think by this time, he's probably on number 5. And I drank a lot. And we sold our house. I was drinking a lot. We sold our house where we were living. I got out of my mom's place. I got an apartment, a 3-bedroom apartment. And I start just getting really depressed and using alcohol to get me through it. And he's still just on me and on, like, just, he gets manic. And I started catching him following me around town. You know, I would pass him going on a certain road, and I knew it was his truck. And I would see, as soon as he saw me, he'd flip a bitch. And he followed me around town. And every time I caught him following me, I don't even know if he knows this to this day, but I just made right turns until he figured it out.
Well played. That's great.
I just kept making right turns. And I mean, it'd go on for 30 minutes sometimes until he figured it out. And I mean, it's funny now, but at the time, my family's freaking out. And you need to put a protection order on him. And he's scary. And so then, probably about April, it's his week with the kids. At this time, we're week on, week off with the kids. And it's his week with the kids, and I'm home. And I'm just sitting watching a movie, and we have these long, narrow windows in my apartment. And I can see where my car is parked from where I'm sitting. And it's raining, and I'm just drinking and crying and watching chick flicks. And I look down, and I see somebody, like, next to my car. And I'm like, what the f-? So I go look at the window. And the person's walking away, and I can tell it's him. Uh-huh. And I run down the stairs, and I'm like, what the hell did you do to my car? And he's like, nothing. I'm like, what the fuck did you do to my car? And he's like, nothing. I didn't do anything. And I said, all right, fine. And I started walking towards my car. He ran towards my car. And he put a GPS on my car.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. He put a GPS.
And this is, and you've been divorced for
January, 4 months, 4 months, 5 months.
Okay. So 4 months after the divorce, now I got to ask, friends with benefits still?
No. At that time I had like completely cut him off. Like once the divorce, okay. Like I was just like, enough. No, we weren't friends with benefits at this time. And he was like on number 5, and I was just like, yeah. No.
Okay. Maybe that's why. Because yeah. He thought, well, if you're not getting it from me, you're getting it somewhere else. So exactly. I need to figure it out.
Well, and at this time, I had a friend, a male friend, completely friends, and I knew him from work, and he had colon cancer. He's dying of cancer. And so I'm helping him out, taking him to doctor's appointments. He'd want to get out of the house and just, he sits at home all day. So he would want to get out of the house and come over here and watch movies and just hang out. And he called me and said, I need you to take me to the ER. And I go pick him up and I take him to the emergency room and completely just friends. I mean, the guy couldn't have sex even if he wanted to. I mean, he had a catheter. I mean.
Well, if he's on chemo or any of that, those things make that.
Right. He didn't work.
Impossible. Yeah, it didn't work.
No. So he starts accusing me of having an affair with this guy. And I'm like, first of all, it's not, we're very divorced. And yeah, who is to talk
about relationship?
Who to talk about having an affair? Like, yeah. We were very married when you had your separate life. He was threatening to go on my work because I knew him from work. I'm going to call HR and tell him that you're having a relationship with him. And I'm like, oh my God, like.
Move on, pal.
So he had 5 times by that time. So.
Physically.
Yeah. So I caught him putting the GPS on my car. The last and final straw. So I got a protection order on him. I went downtown. I filed it. He got served. That was a nightmare. How could you do this to me? How embarrassing. I had cops on my door. There were 3 cops in front of my house and didn't. Whatever. So I said, this is a consequence of you not respecting my boundaries. And so then he started following me around town. And then I found the GPS. And then so one night, it was in May, and there's still fighting going on. Like, but I'm still trying to co-parent. Like, I keep giving him chances to co-parent with me. And he can't, like, he called me and say, hey, let's go to Lane's football game together. So I said, all right, let's go to Lane's football game together. All right, let's have a couple drinks afterwards. So we have a couple drinks afterwards, and then it turned into a fight. And then, why don't you stay? And I'm like, I'm leaving. And it was chaos. It was complete chaos. Uh-huh. And I wasn't perfect. I kept giving him chances. That was my fault. I was very chaotic probably the whole year of 2021. Okay, so we're in May of 2021. He said, I'm getting ready to leave on a trip. I'm going to Phoenix. My whole family's going to Phoenix. My kids aren't, but like all 7 siblings were going to be together for the first time in probably 10, 15 years. So we were all going to be in Phoenix. And so he's like, hey, you're going out of town. Richard calls and says, hey, you're going out of town. I'm having a really hard night. Not because I was going out of town, but can we just hang out like as friends? And at this point, I haven't had sex with him. I don't even know how long. And so I was like, yeah, that's fine. Like, but I got to pack. And he's like, I just want to hang out for a little bit. Well, he gets here and he starts like, we're sitting watching TV. And he's like, can I lay on your lap? And I was like, no, you can't lay on my lap. Like, no. Well, he gets rejected. He freaks out and he leaves. So he leaves and he goes back to his house. My friend who has cancer, I'm packing in my bedroom, and my friend who has cancer calls and says, hey, I want to get out of the house. Come pick me up and I'll help you pack. And I said, all right. And so I go pick him up to get him out of the house. I come to my house and we put a movie on in my room, and I'm like, just lay on the bed and I'll pack. And he gets cold, so he gets under the covers, and I'm packing. He's watching a movie, and I hear something in my... I hear my front door, and I'm like, who's here? And at this point, I've moved into an apartment that has extra security. I have to have a fob to get into the building. I have cameras up in my apartment. So I hear my door, and I make it to my bedroom door, and Richard's storming into my apartment. Storming in. And he comes into my room, and he takes pictures of my friend laying on the bed. He's cursing me out. He's cursing him out. And he's got a restraining order. And I did that for my boundaries. He proceeds to go to his house and show my kids these pictures and say, your mom's lying. Look at who she's sleeping with. Look at him. He's in her mom's bed. And I'm like, he's a friend that has cancer and he was cold. Like,
oh my gosh.
He stole my daughter's keys and broke into my apartment with me in it. And he gets the proof that he wanted and proceeds. He leaves, and my friend says, you need to call the cops. Like, he can't keep getting away with this shit. So I call the cops.
I agree.
He goes, you need to call the cops. And if anything, it needs to be reported. He can't keep getting away with this shit. So I call the cops. And I said, he incriminated himself. He's got a protection order on himself. He took pictures inside my apartment on his own phone. That's proof that he was in my apartment. Because he had gotten away at this point. So I called the cops because he broke into my apartment. And I had just put cameras up in my apartment. And so I'm in Phoenix for the weekend. And I talked to the detective, and she wants to arrest him. And I said, you can't arrest him. He has my kids. And I don't want him getting arrested in front of my kids. And she said, well, can you come home early? I said, yeah, I can come home early. So I came home a day early. I didn't tell anybody. And I'm sitting at the airport. I'm waiting for my girlfriend to pick me up. And I'm on the phone with my sister. I'm terrified to come home at this point because he had just broken into my apartment the night before. I don't know what's waiting for me. I'm sitting at the airport and I look over, and staring at me in the short-term parking lot is a truck that looked like his. And I told my sister, I said, this is how crazy I feel. I said, there is a truck that looks just like his. And it's like pretty much staring at me. And she's like, you're not crazy. You're just ultra sensitive. Like, you're going to be aware of your surroundings for a very long time. And I said, it's right. Like, I could see his truck from a mile away. So my girlfriend gives zero fucks. I said, I think that's him. And she goes, well, we're going to find out. So she walks across the street. She starts walking towards this truck. And as she's walking towards the truck, his seat just starts going back. And he starts pulling the seat back. It was him. So she's the closer she gets, and he just pulls out.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, what?
How did he know that you were coming home?
I have no idea. And how do you know what flight I was on? Like, he's like, there's only so many flights that come in out of Arizona. I'm like, so you were just going to sit at the airport all day? Like, what was the point? So I call the cops. And they arrest him. And they arrest him in front of my kids. It was very traumatic. But I had no choice. Yeah. They got him. They arrested him at his house. He was drinking in his car, sitting in his driveway. He had my old phone records, a copy of my old phone records. He had a second GPS. So he was switching out the GPSs. He had two of them, and he was switching them out. He had binoculars, and he had a loaded weapon.
Wow.
Which, the loaded weapon he always had, he had a concealed carry in here in Idaho. Like, that's normal.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So he got arrested. My kids hated me extremely, so my drinking got worse because it was my fault that Dad got arrested. Drinking got worse. He spent 11 days in jail because his bail was so high, and I checked myself into treatment. My family just said, enough. I was there for about 3 weeks, came out. Also, while he was in jail, I found out about number six because, I mean, these girls... Like, I don't even call them by their names anymore. They're completely numbers to me because that's all they're ever going to be to him. So while he was in jail, I found out about number six because they called me and said, they were recording his phone calls. So I found out about her. So I feel like the whole 2021, I'm drinking, I'm depressed, I am constantly on the defense with him and my kids. It just got to be where, like, my family was like, enough. You are a mess. And I had to check. I never fantasized of hurting myself or committing suicide, but I would wish upon myself not waking up in the morning, wishing I got cancer. I would not care if I got in a fatal car accident. Like, I would never intentionally hurt myself, but I was wishing something upon myself.
Yeah.
And I checked myself into treatment for my alcohol and my mental status. And fast forward to August of 2021. And I'm doing good. He's doing good, I think. And I'm not doing good. I mean, I was still drinking heavily, even after checking myself into treatment. And let's just give it one more chance. And it lasted about 3 weeks, maybe a month. And then come November of, or like October of 2021, he's on number seven. So this is number seven, but number two that the kids know about and number one that the kids have been introduced to. And
so he kept six of them secret. Okay.
This one, he's all in. He's Mr. Honest. I'm doing this right. And what am I supposed to never move on? What about me? So Thanksgiving lands on his week. And he took them over there on Thanksgiving. So mind you, number seven, there's history with number seven. She is my nephew's best friend's mom.
Not a real close mom. Relationship, but... And Boise's a small town.
Well, and my nephew has a lot of problems with addiction and a substance abuse. And he would run away, and that's where he would go. And she would bash my brother and sister-in-law. She was not a good parent. She had been married and divorced, I think, 3 or 4 times. All of them ended in domestic violence. So I knew her and was not fond of her before she was number seven. So when she became number seven, It was like way too close to the circle. She's not a good person. I don't want my kids around her. I don't want my kids around her boys who also have a record. She didn't even have a valid driver's license because she had too many DUIs. So a real winner.
Sounds like the perfect role model, yeah.
Right? So I spend Thanksgiving alone because he's taking them over there. Won't compromise with me. And he said, it lands on my day. It's my choice. And I said, just give me half the day. Like, I will make the kids dinner and take them to a movie. Like, that's what we normally do. No, this is what we're doing. It's my choice. Turns out they're over at her house till like 4 o'clock. My son goes to his friend's house and stays the night on Thanksgiving. My daughter goes to her friend's. And then her friend says that she can't stay the night. So she calls Richard and says, I'm going to go home and stay the night. And he said, that's fine. You can go home and stay the night, but I won't be there. I'm staying at number 7's. So she's 16 years old.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And I even told the kids, I said, the only person who got what they wanted on Thanksgiving was Richard. Was your dad. You spent it by yourself at 16. I spent it by myself. And your brother was at his friend's house. Come December, he's still with number 7. I got the kids Christmas Eve. He got them Christmas. He takes them to number 7's. Come January, 7's out. Don't know what happened. So we are completely no contact at this point. After this last time that we tried to work it out, I absolutely no contact. Trying to balance co-parenting. Kids are kind of a hot mess because, you know, our lives are a hot mess. He's still trying to reach out to me and I shut it down. Like he's on supervised probation. He has a year of domestic violence classes. He gets drug and alcohol tested every week randomly for 2 years. But he
can't
also
be happy about that, but he's probably the best thing that ever happened for him.
No, not necessarily. He knows that it's random, right? So he has to call every day, but he knows it's going to be either a Tuesday or a Thursday. He knows that he's got 3 days to get the alcohol out of his system. So the day that he gets tested, he will drink that night and be fine for the night by the time he gets the next test. So he's learned how to manipulate the system. He cannot be sober. There's no way. So come June.
So just a couple of months ago.
Yeah. I find out about number 8. He's on number 8 now. And I'm just like, yeah, fine, whatever, I don't care. He took the kids to Hawaii in July. But meanwhile, it pisses me off that I'm working my ass off. I'm donating plasma twice a week to pay bills. And I'm selling things. I'm hustling. Like, I'm struggling here. And he's whining and dining all these women and spending money on them. I didn't ask anything. I didn't take anything from the business. I didn't get any alimony or whatever. I didn't take nothing from the business. I took my car and my clothes and whatever we made off the house that sold, and that he kept everything else. So I'm over here struggling, and I know how he works, and I know he's spending all kinds of money on these women. Well, okay, so come June, I find out about number 8. And it's bye week with the kids before they go to Hawaii. So they come to me on Sunday to Sunday. They come to me on Sunday. And just complete assholes the whole week. I'm like, what is the deal here? Like, why are you guys, like, they leave on Saturday, they go to Hawaii. They come home and assholes. And I'm like, what is going on? Well, it makes sense now because they found out on Saturday before they came to my house on Sunday that number 8 was going to Hawaii with them. And they found out from her. He didn't even tell them. So they find out through her that she's going to Hawaii with them. And then he sends them to my house for a week to stress about it. And then they go to Hawaii on Saturday. So they're complete dicks to me the whole week because
they're
stressed out.
They're about to spend a week with dad's girlfriend that they don't even know.
And they don't like what they do know. They don't like her at all. They said she doesn't acknowledge them in their own home. She doesn't talk to them. She didn't talk to them. So she's got 2 boys of herself, and their schedules are opposite. So when he has my kids, she doesn't have hers. So she pretty much spends her whole week over at his house. So they're not even getting alone time with their dad at all anymore because she's always
right
there. So they're in Hawaii, and think that it's a brilliant idea to tell the kids that he has managed to get number 8 pregnant.
Oh my God. And your son is almost 15 now?
Almost 15. My daughter will be 18 in March.
Oh my gosh. And how old are her kids?
Elementary school.
Also, he's
starting over.
Oh my gosh.
So, kids aren't dated. The whole trip's ruined. They took over the trip. Like, it makes me, like, me sick to my stomach and, like, homesick for my kids just to hear about it. Like, those two would go out to dinner and, like, send the kids off to go do whatever they wanted. And, like, that trip was all them, and the kids were basically in Hawaii by themselves. And then get this traumatic news that they're going to have a half-sibling. And him and number 8 can't understand why the kids are so upset. They think this is great. And I'm just like, what freaking work? So Richard's gone back to church. I'm like, bro, Jesus can't get you out of this one, okay? Like, church isn't going to help you right now.
He's good now. Come on. Lauren, he's good now.
I'm not pregnant within the first 3 weeks of them dating.
See, that has to be on purpose, right?
That's what my daughter says, and that's what everybody else says. My daughter says, I think she did it on purpose. Like, she thinks she hit the jackpot because, you know, he love bombs. He will give you. And then once he wants something and he doesn't get it, he'll use that against you and say, well, I've done this for you. I've done that for you. And you can't do this and you can't do that. Like, nothing he does is genuine. Nothing he does is out of the kindness of his heart. There's always a price to pay. Always. So yeah, him and number 8, they're having a kid and they think it's great. And I don't know what their plan is at this point. They break up and get back together pretty often on social media, I've heard. So
I don't love those.
Right? Like, I'll get a text and be like, so-and-so status is single. I'm like, this is so fucking high school. Like, oh.
Exactly.
Like, do you know how ridiculous you look right now? And I can't imagine anybody's happy for them. I would hope that his parents would be like, wake up, what are you doing? Like, so now my kids have gone from, we used to be 1 week, week on, week off, and now they're here 2 weeks and him one. And they did that on purpose so that it shakes up their schedule. So every other time they'll have their dad to themselves because she'll have her kids. So she has to be at her house and she lives like 30 minutes away from us. So them going back and forth to each other's house is going to get old real quick.
Yeah.
But I mean, they've only known each other as long as she's been pregnant. So my kids are just like, it's not going to last. And I'm like, no, it's not. Then dad's going to have one more kid. He's got to pay child support for. I said, yeah, he does.
Yep. Wow. It's a tragic story. It's not even I was about to say it's not even crazy. It's a crazy story, but it's also a tragic story.
Yeah, it is.
You've been divorced now for a year and a half, but I'm going to say the fact that you'd kept that friends with benefits thing going for a while, that was probably, I'm not going to count that as fully divorced, even though you were legally divorced. So you've been officially, I mean, in my brain, apart for about a year now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I even tell my kids that. Like, my kids like, Mom, it's been 2 years. Like, Dad needs to move on. And I'm like, yeah, he has plenty of times that you guys don't know about. And, yeah, it's been 2 years for you guys, but you know what? It's only been a year for me. Like, I have been a year, no contact, no nothing. Like, yeah, it's pretty much been a year.
So are you dating yet?
No.
That's good response. I wish that I had that response when I got married. I started dating way too early.
You know, my life is too much of a shit show that I would not want to bring anybody into it. And I got a lot of work to do on myself.
Good for you. I'm glad that you recognize that. And again, I'm not saying that because, yeah, Lauren, fuck, man, you got a lot to do. It's not that. I'm glad that you see what needs to be taken care of. So good for you.
Thanks.
So you've been through, I mean, it's 21 years of roller coasters of emotion. Let's face it, there's been some drug abuse, alcohol abuse, quasi-suicidal tendencies. threats of violence, actual violence, break-ins, accusations, attempted, if not successful, parental alienation. I mean, holy shit, this one has it all. So you've learned a lot.
Yeah.
What is that one lesson or that one piece of advice that you think that our listeners should learn from you and your experience?
I think my number one takeaway is don't stay for the kids. Don't stay for the kids because you're actually hurting them more than... You're actually doing more damage than good. I mean, I thank my daughter still to this day for giving me the strength to leave. She told me to leave, and I am proud at 14 of her for being strong enough to notice it, recognize it, and just be like, what the hell are you doing, Mom? And I got good kids, and I might have stayed a couple years too long, but don't stay for your kids. No.
It's great advice. I saw something just the other day where this guy gave the five things that he learned, and I don't remember four of the five, but one of them that he said was, if you're gonna get divorced, don't put it off for any reasons, and including kids. And yeah, don't drag it out.
I think a lot of the reason why I drug it out is because I didn't want it. I was so manipulated and sick emotionally by the abuse, by the emotional, verbal. There's a lot of sexual abuse that I didn't realize was sexual abuse until I was gone. I was so sick, I didn't know, and I didn't want to get divorced. I wanted him to get help. I wanted to fix it. I wanted us to work it out. I didn't even want to leave when I left, but I knew I had to. I knew it was the right thing to do for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think the second thing that I would say is stick to your boundaries, go no contact. Just like you said, if you're going to get divorced, if you're in a domestic violence situation, whether it be emotionally, verbally, physically, go no contact and stick to it. I have made the most growth since I've gotten on no contact since the day I left in that year.
Yeah. I've used this analogy or this metaphor before. Familiar with the concept of lobsters in a bucket. Once you guys were two lobsters pulling each other down, every time you got together, he would pull you back down. And you, him, probably to a certain extent. For whatever reason, you guys were just toxic for each other.
Yeah.
So, well, Lauren, thank you again for sharing your story. It's a tragic story, but one that I think a lot of people can relate to a certain extent. And I think you'll help a lot of people today. So thank you for being here.
I hope so. Thank you.
Wow. Now that's a crazy story. What a roller coaster. I'm so glad Lauren has taken the time to figure things out. Every one of our guests has 1,000 bits of advice they could share. So it can be hard to narrow it down to that one piece of information that is the most important. And I think Lauren nailed it today with her advice. Now, as I said at the beginning, we're introducing a new segment today. If you listened to last week's show, you'll remember the last week's show with Leanne was an episode we called Australian for Love, and that Leanne is a psychologist and breakup coach. Well, starting this week, Leanne will join us from time to time, and using her professional training and her life experience, will offer her thoughts on what we've just heard. Here's Leanne.
Hi, Tom and Lauren. What a heartfelt interview that was. And I just want to quickly introduce myself. As Tom said, my name is Leanne Kanzler, and I am a divorce coach and registered psychologist in Sydney, Australia. And what I am going to say is definitely not therapy. I'm going to be talking really generally about what I observed in the interview, and I have not personally met Lauren. So thank you, Lauren, for agreeing to let me talk a little bit about your story. So for everyone listening, I'm wondering if you noticed the level of trauma, the amount of trauma that happened in Lauren's life, not just her relationship, but her whole life. And also for Richard, funnily enough, I also called my partner Richard, and I noticed a lot of similarities between the two Richards from my relationship and from Lauren's as well. And one of the things she says right at the beginning is about how both of them had quite traumatic childhoods, and they came together and they bonded over that. And you may know about the phrase that says, we marry our father or we marry our mother. And the reason that we do that is because unconsciously we are trying to heal the trauma of our childhood. And we're also trying to heal our mother and or our father. And it's not always apparent when we first meet with somebody that this is what's happening. Often, you know, I have clients and they say to me, oh my gosh, I was with this person for 2 or 3 years before I became really obvious that I just married my father or I just married my mother. Because, you know, we really don't get to know somebody truly deeply for a good 2 years. And this is why it's important not to rush into any kind of relationship. The other thing that I want to say to you all, and the reason that I have agreed to do this podcast commentary, is because after a divorce, it's an absolute opportunity for us to learn about ourselves and to work on our trauma. And trauma doesn't necessarily mean a big, massive event that hurts us. It can simply be, my parent wasn't there for me. And that was very obvious with Lauren's story. Her father had passed early and her mother was absent because of so many things going on in her life. And that creates a trauma for Lauren, and it creates a trauma for any of us. When our parents aren't present to us, it creates that sense that I'm not good enough, that perhaps I'm not lovable, that I have to give in to please somebody else so that I can feel loved and wanted. And so it's really important that we recognize these traumas and we deal with them before we go on to trying another relationship. So really be aware of what you experienced as a child so that you can not repeat those patterns, so that you can be focused on, I want a relationship where I am loved and cared for and respected. And hopefully this is what Lauren will achieve, because that's certainly what she deserves after all of the abuse that she went through. The other thing that is really important to look at, and I'm sure many of you have experienced this as well, is the judgment of other people in our world. It's so easy to judge others, whether that judgment is being received by you or even if you are judging other people. Be really aware that your opinions and other people's opinions usually don't matter. It's important to look at, where are these opinions coming from? Are they based from love, or are they based from jealousy or manipulation or control? And listen to the opinions to the point of, is there anything valid in here? Is there anything that I want to accept and take on board? Or is this all stuff that I want to keep at arm's length and set really clear boundaries and say, thank you, but no, I don't want your opinion. I don't value it. I don't need it. Sometimes those opinions and judgments can be very helpful, because we don't always see what is clearly in front of us and other people might see it. So it's important to kind of weigh up what other people are saying to us and be discerning. Do I take it on board or do I push it away? I think that's all I want to say about this one today. There's so much more to say. You've already been listening for a long time. If you want to reach out to me for any reason, please feel free to do so.
Wow, thanks, Leanne. That's great insight. I really hope you enjoyed the show today. If you did, be sure to let us know by giving us a 5-star rating on your podcast app. Thanks for being here. Have an amazing week. Bye.
Divorce doesn't have to be complicated. Our Divorce.com's 3-step procedure provides a simple and affordable process that you can follow at your own pace. Save thousands by visiting ourdivorce.com today.